You're listening to WIOX Roxbury, Community Radio 91.3 FM, streaming live at wioxradio.org and on your smartphone.
WIOX is supported by Willow Dray Farm in Andes, an open pastoral setting for year-round corporate events, artistic retreats, and weddings, pondside ceremonies, an 1,800-square-foot reception pavilion, and meadows for up to 300 guests, set among rolling hills and mountain views. More details about the facilities and nearby accommodations for overnight guests at willowdreyfarm.com, willowdreyfarm.com.
WIOX is supported by Advancing Tobacco-Free Communities, educating parents and kids about the dangers of smoking. Tobacco companies spend more than $500,000 a day in New York State on promotions that put their products where kids can see them. The more kids see tobacco, the more likely they are to start smoking. Learn more at gotobaccofreedos.org.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his heart.
You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at wioxradio.org, on the web and on any smart device. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but we have a guest tonight, and that's Anna Plattner sitting across from me from American Ginseng Farm. How's it going?
Hi, I'm doing great.
So, where are you coming from?
So, today I was working on one of our ginseng sites in Meredith, New York. We have 8 properties right now that we grow ginseng on, and all throughout the Catskills, and even into Albany County, too. All around, you got to drive like 2 hours between some of the different sites.
Sure.
So, I live in Caro, New York, in Greene County, but I was in Meredith today.
Is that where you're from, Caro? Or
I grew up in Greenville.
Okay.
Which is just one town north of there. And I wanted to move back to this area after graduating college and get into farming and forest farming, if possible. I wasn't sure that would be possible, but it turned out it was. So
forest farming,
agroforestry. Yep.
Uh huh.
I have always been interested in being outdoors. I wasn't really sure how I would work that out in my career, whether it would be on a farm or as a biologist or ecologist or forester. And I went to Cornell for my undergrad. I had a natural resources degree, and I got really into the idea of forest farming and seeing whether there was a way to make that really, on a commercial scale, really work. And I would just was very lucky to meet Bob Bifus and get into the ginseng farm when I did. So,
Bob Bifus has been on before. He's got a tattoo of ginseng, doesn't he?
He does, and he likes to show it too. It's a great tattoo.
Right.
I would say that that's why our farm is situated where it is in the Catskills, is because Bob is well-renowned throughout the country and East Asia, even. His expertise reaches very far.
They know of Bob Bifus in China, is what you're saying?
Well, somehow the investors who wanted to start this project found him, so
right.
Yeah.
So what got you, you know, let's back up a second here. How did you get into natural resources, I guess, you know, in general?
So growing up in Greene County, I I worked and volunteered on farms, was in 4-H and FFA, and wanted to learn more about the woods. And so natural resources as a major, I kind of stumbled into that at Cornell, and I loved it. I loved forest ecology. I was never really a plant person. I was definitely into animals more. But once I learned how the ecosystems can change and how the trees, especially trees, can completely change the way you look at the woods. Knowing the tree species. Once I learned how to identify trees, you learn so much about the land use history, and all of that was really exciting and interesting to me. So I wanted to learn more about the woods and get into ecology that way. I didn't really want to stay in academia after I graduated. I didn't want to go on to get a master's. I wanted to get out there and do something. And somehow I definitely have a scientific mind, and I wanted research to be a part of whatever I did. I wanted to do something exploratory. And this has just been so perfect for me. Because the way that we grow ginseng, it's called wild simulated. It's never really been done on as large of a scale as we are attempting at American Ginseng Farm. So what I'm doing is constantly changing and adapting, and we're becoming more efficient at the way we're growing and finding our sites. And so it's always new and always fun, which I love.
So you're the person making it happen on the ground, is what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm the general manager of the company. Right. Bob is always available whenever I need him, on a consultant basis at this point. But I'm kind of running the show.
Nice.
Which is really great. We've been working up to that point. He's already retired once in his life, and so
right.
Day-to-day management is never really something he wanted to get into at American Ginseng Farm.
So American Ginseng Farm.
I mean,
what is this thing anyway? I mean, I was traveling in the middle of nowhere near Treadwell, and I saw this brand new school, but there's no kids in there. And then someone was like, "Yeah, it's a ginseng farm." Like, it's a ginseng farm. That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
So can you explain this?
So the facility in Treadwell actually was only purchased by us less than 2 years ago, I want to say. We've been growing ginseng for much longer than that at this point. Our company started, we planted our first real ginseng in 2012. And as we grow more and more ginseng and expand, we need to have a facility to handle all of the drying and processing and production of our herbal teas and tinctures and capsules, you know, supplements. And so we've been sort of hoping, looking for the right opportunity to come around to get somewhere where we can really get into that. Also do some indoor mushroom cultivation to have a certified lab. And so the Kellogg School in Treadwell is in pristine condition, and my boss just fell in love with it, and here we are.
So who's your who's the boss?
So Eva Tsai is our CEO, and she's actually an accountant. She has her own accounting firm, and she and Bob, she had Bob come in to get the ginseng production started, which is where I come in. But she gets investor money in from a number of different shareholders, and she handles all of that and has the vision for the broader project. She's the best. And so she's facilitated all of this happening.
Is there like a board of directors? Or
yes.
Oh,
yes.
There is, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a really great project. I mean, ginseng farming is extremely, top heavy. Like, you have to put a lot of time and effort and then just wait and wait and wait. So it takes a lot of funding to get going. And that is why this hasn't really, wild simulated ginseng hasn't been in production at this level, is because that's really inhibitory. But Eva's managed to make it happen and get this going, which is Bob's dream. He's been wanting to do this for 30 years, I'm sure.
Right.
And it's just never been feasible.
Now there's investment, and it's happening.
And it's happening,
That's cool. And is this a multinational, international? Is that the right term? Yeah. Is this an international company? Like, is there connections to another market? directly?
Well, yes, marketing, definitely. I mean, some of the shareholders are from various other countries, a lot of our ginseng products are going to be sold direct to East Asia. That is where people value ginseng and reishi and a lot of these other herbs, and it's very labor intensive to grow it. Yeah. And so in order for us to reach the market that's going to make this work for us, we're going to East Asia. We will have our products available on the internet and locally as well. But the bulk of our sales will be to like the Chinese Walgreens, for example,
right.
Something like, in East Asia. I'm not super familiar with all of that, because my job is to grow ginseng. That's
right.
What I do. Eva has the broader vision for everything. So
if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. John's out tonight, but tonight's topic is American Ginseng Farm with Anna Plattner, their general manager. So ginseng, how did you get into ginseng? And when you were first introduced to it, do you remember? Because I remember when I first heard about it, and I was like, okay, that's a weird plant that grows a long time. It's an herb. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Do you remember that at all?
I don't know when I first heard about it, but when I first really started learning about it was at Cornell with Ken Mudge, who is now retired, but he was the big agroforestry professor at Cornell, and he taught us about it, and I feel like I didn't really take it seriously. I was more into mushrooms. I really liked the mushroom production, shiitakes and oysters, and I was like, ginseng's cool, but it also seemed like a hard thing to get into because it's so picky about where it grows, and you have to learn all the indicator plants, and it didn't really seem feasible to really delve into that at that point. But once I started getting together with Bob, it all came really easy. I used to follow him around in the woods with a notebook and just take in as much from him as I could.
For lack of a better term, Bob's kind of like the ginseng guru of the Catskills.
I think
and
that's
beyond.
A great term.
So when you're following him around in the Maidenhair Fern Forest.
Exactly.
What are you writing down? What do you remember? Like, okay, what are you looking for? What sticks out to you about a shangable habitat?
Now I know a lot. back then, I think I was writing, I was trying to draw pictures of what the leaves looked like on different plants so that I could remember them. Now it's just in me, you know, I can smell ginseng habitat. Even those north-facing cooler slopes with sugar maples dominating it and lots of leaf duff from, like, you know, hundreds of years of that accumulation. That's what ginseng loves. And there's even a smell to those woods. I've searched over hundreds of properties at this point for ginseng because we buy and lease land, and ginseng is so picky about where it grows, it's hard for us to find properties that are really going to work for us. We want at least 20% of a property to be plantable. And the way we grow, we don't till the soil. We don't add anything. We're not enriching it in any way. No gypsum, no lime. We are finding that perfect spot, planting the seed, and then walking away because that's where ginseng grows. That's where it's going to do the best. And yeah, so I would say my biggest, if I had to pick my top indicator plants, maidenhair fern, rattlesnake fern, baneberry or doll's eye. There's two species that look similar. One has red berries, one has white berries. And then blue cohosh. For trees, I look for sugar maple. Basswood is a really big one. And butternuts, too. Because the ginseng it only grows in that certain habitat, I like to look for trees that are more rare that tend to really strongly associate with ginseng. And I'd say that's like basswood and butternut.
You mentioned land use history. What about the land use history of an area that says to you, yeah, maybe it's changeable?
Well, that's a good question. I've been developing that a lot this season, actually, because if an area was a pasture, say less than 50 years ago, you're going to have a hard time. You're not going to find your indicator plants because when I say pasture, I mean like cows were allowed in the woods, not young forests. Like if cows have been on that woods within 50 years or so, I would say, I get nervous planting ginseng there. Even if it's beautiful overstory of sugar maples, the leaf litter hasn't like that awesome like duff layer that's like multiple inches deep. That hasn't developed yet, and that's the community in which ginseng really grows is just under that in the Catskill clay soil with more rocks than soil in it. But ginseng needs that older forest, and so when I see these younger forests where it had been pasture maybe like less than 100 years ago, there's less hummocks and hollows in there, and the soil tends to have worms.
Less hummocks and less pit and mound, you think?
I think so, yeah.
So not as much pit and mound.
No, because the pit and mounds are formed from trees falling over and their roots upheaving and causing a mound and a pit. And that, if it's a younger forest, that hasn't happened as much. There's been more soil compaction from animals or machinery. And do you not agree with me? Or?
No, I'm actually asking. I really want to know. Because there's certain areas I'm thinking about that are old, and they puzzle me why there's not ginseng there.
Okay.
And then there's other areas that, yeah, they fit all what you said, and there's ginseng there, and it makes sense. But then there's some areas of the wilderness, areas of state land, where I'm like, you know, there's no ginseng there. I looked, and there's none. It's old. It was never even pastured. I do agree, though, that, yeah, where pasture has not been significant, it seems to be more ginseng. But
yeah. You know. We've seen, like, clear divides, even, where there's a stone wall. You know, it's like, it's like a solid forest at that point. The trees are super tall, canopies well developed on both sides of the stone wall. But one side of the stone wall, there's no ginseng. The other side, there's ginseng and all of its associated indicators. And I really think that land use history becomes really important in that sort of detective work you can do when you're trying. When here I am trying to maximize every square foot of ginseng, you know, planting area that I can. I start to really nitpick.
Yeah.
Where I go. I'd say for older woods where you think that there should be ginseng, it could be deer.
Yeah.
Deer browsing a ginseng plant, because it's a perennial herbaceous plant, deer browsing it 1 year is not going to harm it.
Right.
It can stay dormant under the soil, the root can, for years before coming back up again. So I'd say it would have to be steady deer browse over a number of years. Slugs as well will eat the tops.
Damn slugs.
Voles will eat the roots. There's a lot of native predators of ginseng. Also, I think there's a lot of poaching on state land too. So people have been digging ginseng in the Catskills since the 1700s. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was very popular. I would say most farmers probably, if they had decent woods, they would have their own patch of ginseng in the woods. And in the early 1900s is when it became popular to grow ginseng under artificial shade cloth. And upstate New York was a big player in that industry of the very start of growing ginseng in that more like intensive cultivated setting. I believe the founder of artificial ginseng cultivation was in upstate New York. Maybe Sydney. I could be making that up though.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the deer, because people are probably tired of me mentioning the deer.
Yeah.
But I agree that's kind of the factor, I think, in those older forests where there should be ginseng and there's not.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there's very few deer in those higher elevations that I have in mind.
We see lots of browse.
There's the browse is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's really bad. It's surprisingly bad. And I think you know what happens is that some of these areas that I'm referring to are so difficult to hunt that you also don't get hunting pressure as much.
Yeah.
We
actively encourage our neighbors to hunt on our land or sign leases with people who are interested in hunting our land. Deer have the potential to be a pretty big issue for us going forward.
Yeah.
Once we're growing a lot of ginseng in a small area and the tops get really big and got the four prongs. And right now, turkeys are probably our biggest problem.
No, I didn't even think about that.
Well, they eat the ginseng seeds.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Chickens eat everything. I guess turkeys would too.
Oh, yeah. They come through and they scratch you. I'm sure you've seen like turkey
sure.
scratch all over the woods. Turkeys are more methodical about the way that they look for food. You know, mice might just like come get some seeds over here and go over there and then cache some and eat some. But turkeys, they find an area where they find a ginseng seed and they just like grit it out and just search the whole area. So we've had like a half acre of ginseng seed like eaten by turkeys. And the only spots we found germination then are like where there was a tree fallen over and they didn't really bother scratching in the branches of the fallen tree or in like areas where it wasn't as easy to get to.
Hmm.
We did get a nuisance permit last year for the first time and took care of some turkeys, and we found ginseng seed in the turkey's crop, so we have like proof to DEC that
direct evidence
this is going a problem for us. So hopefully that can help in the future. Luckily this year we haven't had much predation issues at all yet this year with any animals. Some mouse caches and things, but nothing major.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is American Ginseng Farm with Anna Plattner.
Jumping up and down the floor, my hat is an animal, and once there was an animal,
It had a song that mowed the lawn. The son was an okay guy. They had a pet dragonfly. The dragonfly ran away, but it came back with a story to say.
WIOX is supported by Columbia Green Media and their Hudson Valley 360 multimedia website. For news and event information, including video and photo galleries covering the Hudson Valley and the Catskills, HudsonValley360.com. WIOX is supported by the United Way of Delaware and Otsego Counties, with local programs designed to improve health, education, and income security in our communities, including the Volunteer Generation Fund, matching volunteers with local agencies fighting hunger and emergency food and shelter services. More information at 607-432-8006 or unitedwaydo.org.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is American Ginseng Farm with guest Anna Blattner. She's their general manager. So the ginseng farm, which is hundreds of acres now, right?
Yeah, it's up there.
So we kind of talked a little bit about this, but why the Catskills? Why not the White Mountains? Why not the Adirondacks or the Greens or whatever?
So Catskills ginseng is fairly well renowned. It tends to get bigger. Catskills roots are known for their monster roots, where they grow. They don't grow as fast. But they get really big. Whereas in other areas of the Appalachian Mountains, which are, you know, generally further south from here, their ginseng might grow faster, but it doesn't necessarily, it does not get as big as ours does. I mean, I've seen pictures of monster roots from down there, but I think in general, there's more from here. Catskill Mountain ginseng is also a little less available, so it's kind of like, or New York ginseng in general, there's not as much of a harvest from here. So it just kind of gets that specialty, vibe from it. We grow in the Catskills for the most part because that's where Bob Bifus is. And he's the reason that all of this got started, along with Eva. And so we started right near him. We do plan on expanding. We're not opposed to growing in other states if we can get somebody we trust who wants to start an operation somewhere else. We're not opposed to that. But right now we're sticking to the Catskills.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the White Mountains might not have the calcium either for it. I mean, they don't really grow. This is going to make some people mad. New Hampshire just doesn't grow very good sugar maple, okay? In places it does, but mostly it's so rocky there, and it's at that granite, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Vermont seems to grow better sugar maple, a little richer soils.
And Vermont ginseng is also highly regarded.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
The calcium in the Catskills, I do believe, also comes primarily from the sugar maple trees accumulating. So sugar maple leaves have like insane amounts of calcium in them, and that over a long time accumulating in the soil brings that calcium level up to like 4,000 pounds per acre. We look for a minimum of 2,000 pounds per acre. Whenever we're looking at a new property, we have the soil tested and we interpret the results. We look for not just calcium, but phosphorus and a few other minerals, and the pH, we want it to be about 5.5. So we're like really picky about where we grow our ginseng. There are areas outside of the Catskills where it's limestone bedrock, and the calcium there could be 13,000 pounds per acre. And we do have a ginseng site in Albany County that we're growing ginseng in that environment.
And
it's
like
growing
the Helderbergs,
super
right?
Well. The Helderbergs are limestone, certain areas of the Helderbergs. There's also a sort of escarpment that leads from like Saugerties all the way up into the Helderbergs. That's all limestone. This is east of the Helderbergs, more like almost a ravina, like in that area.
Interesting.
There's wild ginseng on our site, and in that ecosystem in general. But it's really interesting because I don't care if there's sugar maples in the overstory there, because I've got 13,000 pounds per acre of calcium. Sugar maples are more important in the Catskills because they give us the calcium that we need. But I've got ginseng planted in white pine and chinkapin oaks. And
you have?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a really diverse forest. I mean, there are sugar maples, and there's red oaks and a lot of other species as well. It's an extremely diverse forest, but the ginseng grows great in there.
No kidding.
Yep.
Yeah, that's like sacrilegious in the Catskills to find ginseng and anything but basswood and sugar maple.
Yeah, it really changes depending on what region you're in.
Yeah, I just wondered about that. I mean, there's some areas I've been in the Taconics, and I'm like, you know, there's got to be ginseng here, but I didn't really take the time.
I bet there is.
So, who knows? Well, someone knows. But, all right. Like, what's the big deal about ginseng and ling? Well, I'm not even going to attempt to say this word. Lingzi, which is reishi, right?
Yeah, it's more like, I'm bad at it. It's like lingzi. It's like,
yeah.
Anyways, I mean, so lingzi is reishi mushroom.
Which is also known as lacquer mushroom right here, commonly. We call I
don't know.
There's a lot of common names, but yeah. It's the one that's really lacquery-like, right? Like you
yeah,
see it
definitely.
On...
Yeah, definitely. It grows on hemlocks.
Does it have to be growing on a softwood?
So there are... So traditionally in... Well, okay. Traditionally in East Asian medicine, for thousands of years, they have used both ginseng and reishi. The reishi species that they traditionally use is Ganoderma lucidum, which grows on maple trees. We in the Catskills have... Ganoderma suge, which grows on hemlocks. So, but the medicinal properties are virtually identical. It's kind of like how we're growing American ginseng, but in East Asia, Asian ginseng, a different species was traditionally used. So
there's no lucidum in the Catskills?
I think there is, but I've never found it.
Okay.
We regularly have June flushes of reishi in our hemlock woods. And so most of that wild harvest comes from that species. That's why we're using that.
Yeah.
We're not tied to that species. We will wild harvest lucidum if we find it, but I've never found it.
So, I mean, there's all sorts of cool words surrounding these two medicinals like adaptogen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty. The lingzi or whatever or reishi is also known as mushroom of immortality. I mean, that's a pretty special title there. You know,
yeah,
king of herbs for ginseng. So these things are like thousands of years of reverence.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
A big deal. I mean, what do they know about these plants that Americans or Westerners don't?
I don't think that so. Ginseng was traditionally used by the Indians that used to live here, and they generally used ginseng for like gastro issues, and so it was used. I don't think that ginseng or reishi, like if you go thousands of years back, was kind of like the cure-all the way that it necessarily has now. Yeah. I think some of that reverence for ginseng in Asian cultures is due to its former scarcity. By the 17th century, wild ginseng, Asian ginseng, had been very much overhunted in most of Asia. And because of that rarity, it became only available to the very ill and the very wealthy. And it became wildly available again, both with American ginseng trade and above all when people started to cultivate the plant under artificial shade cloth settings instead of finding it in the wild. But I think that a lot of its reverence also has to do with its scarcity. But it is highly regarded still in East Asian medicine. I'm not trying to it's, you know, Panax quincofolius is a scientific name for ginseng, and panacea is Greek for all healing. In Mandarin Chinese, my pronunciation is terrible, but it's ren shen, which is man root, which comes from it sometimes taking the shape of a man. Of a human, like, form, the root of it.
Yeah.
In Chinese medicine, it has a slightly cooling and calming effect. It can sharpen your concentration and sort of open your heart and eyes. It heals and restores your digestive system function, and it helps to balance your body when you're fighting illness or fatigue. It's particularly useful for people who are aging. I've taken ginseng for like a week or two at a time because it is the kind of thing that you need to take regularly. It's not like, oh, I'm getting sick, let me take some ginseng.
Right.
Taking it regularly prolongs your life, but I'm not going to feel the effect because I'm young and healthy. I've heard Bob say that when you get over a certain age, maybe 60 or so, but I'm sure it varies from individual, that's when you really start to feel the effects of ginseng, but it's good for people with autoimmune diseases or chronic illness in general.
It's an adaptogen.
And chemotherapy, too. People undergoing chemotherapy in scientific studies have found to have a higher energy level when taking ginseng.
I mean, you know, I was reading through your website and American Ginseng Farm, and one of these studies claimed that reishi, 9 to 20% of animals in studies showed anti-aging. It's 9 to 20%, I think, longer life was, I think I wrote that wrong, but I think it was a 9 to 20% longer life. It was pretty remarkable. There was just so much information on it. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'd say in traditional Chinese medicine, reishi is used for general fatigue, asthma, respiratory ailments, insomnia. It's said to like ease the mind, and in that way, it's associated with longevity for sure. I know that their compounds within the mushroom are anti-inflammatory. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's triterpenes? No.
Yeah. Triterpenes or something?
Whatever. Yeah, triterpenes. That's it. They're almost steroid-like molecules that are anti-inflammatory, and so they would be very good for you to stabilize your blood pressure and blood sugar and to combat tumors, and they've demonstrated some anti-cancer activity in studies as well. Those are Western studies on both living organisms and in vitro. So, I mean, we're still the sort of Western world is still really exploring these. A lot of the studies are done in East Asia, and I don't speak Mandarin, so I haven't been able to do that research myself.
No.
Yeah. They're very good for you, and they complement one another, ginseng and reishi, which is why in a lot of our medicinal blends, whether they be supplements or teas or tinctures, we are planning on using the two herbs combined. I mean, a lot of people think ginseng is like cure-all, but no, ginseng is used in a blend with other herbs to help balance the body. And same thing with reishi. We also grow field-grown herbs, astragalus, bicol skullcap, some other different Chinese medicinal herbs that we're planning on blending with our ginseng and our reishi.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday. Tonight's topic is American Ginseng Farm with Anna Plattner. In the last segment, we'll ask Anna about the grunt work planting this ginseng and reishi.
And we'll all slow down anyway. Well, I think you're making too on.
All right.
Don't you worry, we're all flown on. We're
all right.
All flown on.
All right, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. We got guests in here, Anna Plattner. She's from the American Ginseng Farm, and she is their general manager. So let's get into the nitty-gritty about propagating or whatever, managing ginseng. I mean, what are you doing that's so different, and, you know, how does it work?
So I could talk for that about for, like, 4 hours, but we'll
keep
it to
minutes.
Like 10 minutes. Yeah. So ginseng traditionally is grown in one of two ways. I'd say over 90% of the ginseng on the market today is from artificial shade cloth propagation.
What does that mean?
So that means that you're tilling the soil, trying to add certain nutrients to create the environment that ginseng likes, and then you're planting like at least like 60 pounds of ginseng seed an acre. So there's plants grown every few inches. They're real close together. And they're grown under like shade cloth structure. So you can buy they use like a 70% shade over top of them. And that is not the environment that ginseng traditionally grows in. Like, it doesn't like it. And it's very stressed out. And ginseng is already extremely gets fungal diseases extremely easily. And so in that setting, you have to spray it on like a 2-week schedule with fungicides and pesticides. Mm. And that can like never be organic. But that's how it's traditionally grown. And I have a hard time calling that medicine. But what we're trying to do is grow it organically. And the only way to really do that is to grow it in its natural environment where it's not going to be stressed out. The other way that people grow ginseng more traditionally is woods cultivated. So you're using the shade of trees, but you're tilling the soil and amending it and also spraying in a woods cultivated setting. So we fall under the category of wild simulated.
Mm.
And so basically we're planting the seeds and letting them grow. We're not tilling. We're not adding any amendments. We're removing the leaf litter, putting the seeds down, and putting the leaf litter back on top. That's all we're doing.
How are you doing that?
Yes, that is a complicated question. The way that people have done that in the past has been with rakes. You would rake off the leaf litter and put the seeds down. You'd stomp on them to get them all settled into the soil and then put the leaf litter back on with your rake. We can't afford to do that on our scale, so we've developed protocols where we use leaf blowers. We use commercial backpack leaf blowers,
yeah.
And where we create lanes through the woods, and we identify our areas earlier in the year where we're going to plant. We plan it all out, prep the area, so sometimes there'll be like recently fallen trees or brambles or larger areas of hay-scented fern. And so we'll come in and clean that up so that we can get through there easily with the leaf blower. Another thing that we do before we put the seed down is we aerate the soil a little bit. Just like, I don't know if anyone knows what a garden weasel is, but it's like a little rake, but it's got little prongs on the end of it in a circle, and you can roll it along the dirt and kind of fluffs it up a tiny bit, because we're often working on very steep slopes. And so if we try to toss seed just flat on the ground, it's just going to roll to the bottom. So we fluff that soil a tiny bit just to create little holes for the seed to fall in. Ginseng seed does not need to be under the soil. It can be sitting on top of the soil and germinate just fine. It does need to consistently be moist. So you need to put mulch on top. And the way we do that is by putting the leaf litter back on top. So as we're uncovering our next area to plant, we're covering where we just planted, and we're kind of leapfrogging through our sections.
Okay. So you can just take the leaf litter off, press a seed in, and put it back over if you were doing it on your own, right?
Yeah, it's real simple and very straightforward. Ginseng seed is a little difficult because the natural life cycle of that seed is that when the berries ripen, which is this time of year on a ginseng plant, that seed is going to fall into the ground. and it goes through the first winter, and then it sits there dormant for an entire growing season. And during that growing season, the embryo inside that hard shell is growing rapidly. And by the end of that first growing season, sometimes it even starts to split the seed open a tiny bit. We call it smiling because we love when that happens. That means our seed is like ready to go. So then it sits underground again for another cold period, and it'll come up the next spring. And during all of that time, it can't dry out. If it dries out for more than a few weeks, it is likely that the embryo will die. Ginseng in the wild has like a 1% success rate at reproducing. It's pretty terrible.
So you have to water or something?
We count on nature to do it all for us.
Yeah.
The soil in the cool north and east facing slopes where there's sugar maples generally remains soil unless we're wet unless we're having a drought. I mean, ginseng doesn't like wet feet, but it doesn't want to dry out either. Even once it's a growing plant, it needs consistently moist soil.
That's one thing the Catskills has is seepy areas, not swampy, but
we are
seepy.
Finding those right now with the weather we've been having. Sometimes there's like whole streams through our areas that we thought were like dry. So
what was your biggest pest, I guess, that you maybe didn't think about it would be as bad?
I mean, I said earlier our biggest pest is turkeys. They do a lot of damage in a very little amount of time. But the little mice are real problematic, and chipmunks too. I know what has eaten our seed because mice kind of like chew a little hole in the corner of the seed and like suck out the embryo, and a chipmunk will actually split the seed in half. So when I'm going through I'm looking at where we planted, I know what's eating it, and it's really like interesting to see what could be going on.
So do you want more owls in the woods or something?
Actually, We got some owl boxes from CFA.
You getting anything in there or what? And these owls are really picky, man.
Unfortunately, I haven't checked this season. I can't say whether they're working or not. But yes, owls are great.
Yeah.
Coyotes are great.
Okay.
They're going to eat all the little mice and voles for us, keep that population down.
Sure.
So
yeah, I remember when Catskill Forest Association put those up in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Dropped out there.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't there for that, so.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Florida for the winter, but.
Oh, that was a good place to be. Yeah, we were walking out in the snow. It was pretty good.
I did my winter in Florida that year.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is American Ginseng Farm with their general manager, Anna Plattner. And believe it or not, they make a business off growing ginseng and reishi. We only have about a minute or two, so where do you see the future of ginseng and reishi mushroom?
Well, I'd like to continue to encourage people who are interested in agroforestry to try to grow ginseng and start to wild harvest reishi. You can also grow reishi on bolts like you would other mushrooms that are more common. And I think that there's a real future in land management from growing ginseng. And because right now the way you make money off your woods is you have it logged. Ginseng can provide a viable alternative to logging where you don't have to remove a lot of trees from the woods and have a much more minimal impact on the woods. Ginseng and logging can happen together if it's a light harvest as well. You can manage your woods in many different ways. And I think that conservation through cultivation is a big thing. We have a lot of pressure on our native populations because of people harvesting ginseng in the wild. And the more people are stewarding patches that they've planted and growing themselves, the less pressure is going to be on the wild populations that are way out there in the middle of the state lands, for example, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's another advantage, I think, of ginseng is that it can fall under an agricultural assessment, which is a much easier process than the 480A forest tax law program. So, hey, you know, if people can remain viable on their forested land, they're more likely to keep their land. And I think that's a good thing, but, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Anna, thanks for coming on From the Forest. You know, we've had Bob on in the past, and we're going to have you on again.
Yeah, and, it's been fun.
Yeah, talk about, you know, all your challenges that you're experiencing with growing ginseng and reishi mushroom in the Catskill Mountains. If you want to check them out, you know, there's American Ginseng Farm. Of course, they're online. So thank you for coming on.
And, thank you.
Up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblong, and have a good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, did appear. Upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she...
Greetings, Americans, on all the ships at sea from WIOX, Roxbury.
WIOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, offering compassionate care at a CMS nursing home. More information at 845-586-1800. WIOX is supported by Pico Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, featuring farmhouse cuisine, prepared with locally grown ingredients and a growing wine and craft beer list. Open for dinner Thursday through Monday at 4 p.m. The Peekamoose Tap Room and Lounge serves food and drink until midnight Friday and Saturday. Reservations and information at peekamooserestaurant.com or 845-254-6500.